The concept of using semifinals in the Eurovision Song Contest officially began in 2004. However, the EBU experimented with a few projects which suspiciously look like semifinals. One of those projects was Kvalifikacija za Millstreet, the pre-selection show where newly formed countries competed to see which three would join the Eurovision family in 1993. On today's episode of ESC 101, we're going to be learning the story behind Kvalifikacija za Millstreet, reviewing the seven entries which hope to claim a spot in the grand final, and find out which countries almost competed in the pre-selection show. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 31. My name is Alexander. Kvalifikacija za Millstreet, in my opinion, is a semifinal. It took countries that desired to enter into the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest and used a voting system to narrow down the selection to three countries which would qualify to the grand final. Much like our 2024 semi-final system, 31 countries hope to participate in the grand final, but only 20 of those 31 countries can join the Big Five and host country to the show on Saturday night. The semi-final system narrows the selection to a set number and eliminates those who don't place in the top 10. Kvalifikacija za Millstreet eliminated the countries who didn't place in the top 3. Ergo, this is a semi-final. But if you're not familiar with Eurovision history, you may be asking yourself, why didn't the EBU just let all seven countries compete in the competition? Eurovision in 1993 had 25 acts in the grand final, we have 26 in the modern contest, and we've done 27 back in 2015, and we also had 28 entries in the semifinal in 2007. Surely having 29 countries in the grand final wouldn't be the end of the world. Why bother with a pre-selection show? Let's dive into this week's episode to answer that very question. When the Eurovision Song Contest began in 1956, Europe was a polarized continent. Although it's technically more complicated than that due to a number of political anomalies, but essentially there were two main blocks of Europe, the West and the East. Without getting into the long-winded history of the European Broadcasting Union, the Eurovision Song Contest started out with seven countries and expanded as countries joined the contest either through pre-existing or newly granted memberships. As the contest became more complicated with cameras, lighting setups, and the increasing use of technology, the logistical challenge of hosting 20 countries in a music competition was becoming difficult. Imagine having to deal with delegations speaking multiple different languages and having to learn the camera and lighting cues for more than 20 different acts. While it may seem easier today, there were several technological limitations, and the number of countries that could feasibly fit into the contest was reaching a limit. Adding more countries was not really a feasible option to the contest, but by 1993, the EBU was facing a massive problem. In the 1990s, when communist regimes in the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia simultaneously collapsed, Europe's eastern half splintered into dozens of new countries, and pre-existing countries found themselves free from the overseeing eye of the Soviet Union. Their newfound freedom started a mass application for membership into the EBU, which, of course, they were all too happy to accept. The EBU was founded in 1950 by broadcasters from 20 different countries. In 1993, there were new memberships being requested by broadcasters from 17 different countries, which is a lot of new countries. The sheer volume of broadcasters joining the EBU, and by extension its programs, would be overwhelming for those dealing with the logistics of hosting programs like the Eurovision Song Contest. To go from 23 interested countries to 40 in the span of a year would be impossible to manage. I imagine those within the European Broadcasting Union partially foresaw what would happen with these new countries wishing to join them, however their ideas for maintaining the limit as to who could join the contest were not exactly the greatest. Now, Now, I don't know what limitations existed in the 1990s. It's really easy for me to say, well, why don't you just use semifinals? That's such an obvious idea. But I don't know the context behind their decision making, and I'm sure at the time it was their best framework they could come up with. And all I'll say is that I'm glad they got rid of the relegation system in 2004, but I wish they wouldn't have done it in the first place. The Eurovision Song Contest was founded on the values of inclusion and the promotion of each country's culture on an equally footed stage. The only major requirement, apart from money and broadcasting the contest itself, was EBU membership. It was an EBU event for EBU members, a way to bring broadcasters together and showcase their musical cultures to one another and the public who watched the show. This becomes a problem when too many broadcasters want to be included. How do you make room for 17 new broadcasters? They can't do a contest with 40 countries in the show. It would stretch on for hours and the logistics would not be possible. They also can't arbitrarily remove countries as it would go against the inclusionary values of the contest. They didn't want to deny new countries joining the contest because, apart from going against the inclusionary values, some of these countries were actively fighting wars to preserve their culture, and it would look really elitist of the EBU to only include Western broadcasters. The EBU had 1 year to come up with some kind of system, and so they came up with the pre-selection program for all of the newly joined broadcasters. If a broadcaster was new to the Eurovision Song Contest, they would have to go through this new system. After the 1992 contest, held on May 9, 1992 in Malmö, Sweden, the EBU had to deal with a number of countries applying to join the organization, with memberships being granted on January 1, 1993. When conducting research for this episode, I searched through a number of newspapers across Eastern Europe, and I barely even scratched the surface of available material. I'm sure someone could write a PhD thesis on Kvalifikacijas at Mill Street, but I managed to put together a small timeline between the information on the Wikipedia page for Kvalifikacijas at Mill Street, alongside newspapers from Estonia and Slovenia. The Wikipedia page cites a newspaper from Croatia called Slobodna Dalmacija. Unfortunately, those sources are locked behind a paywall, which doesn't even function correctly. So to whomever made that decision, shame on you for paywalling historical research. There are at least citations with the dates and page numbers, thank goodness for that. So let's begin. The concept of Kvalifikacijas za Mill Street seems to begin in mid-November of 1992, with an article from the aforementioned Croatian newspaper dating November 14, 1992, page 31, which cites a number of countries that expressed interest in joining the Eurovision Song Contest. The Wikipedia article mentions the following countries that wanted to join the contest: Belarus, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Bulgaria, Croatia, Czechia, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Russia, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Ukraine. Imagine if all 14 of those countries were to have joined Eurovision on the top of the 22 existing countries that participated in 1992. Yugoslavia was sanctioned from the contest, and with 36 countries wanting to join the contest, it was no easy task to handle the logistics. An Estonian newspaper dated January 25, 1993, first mentions their desire to join the Eurovision Song Contest, so I'm not sure if Estonia was included in the November article from Croatia. However, as the months progressed, the list of hopeful countries began to shrink. On February 22nd, an Estonian news article cited 12 interested countries, which means that sometime between November and February, Latvia and Ukraine withdrew their intentions to compete. However, in that same article from February 22nd, it was reported that Lithuania and Russia also withdrew their intention to join the contest, leaving 10 countries to remain. Additional countries ended up pulling out of the contest, leaving 7 countries to enter into Kvalifikacijas za Mill Street. According to the aforementioned article from February 22nd, countries were required to submit their songs to the EBU and the Slovenian broadcaster by March 3rd, with the delegations traveling to Slovenia on March 30th. It's safe to assume that by the beginning of March, the EBU had their confirmed list of participants. In the same Estonian newspaper, an article published on March 22nd listed the 7 participating countries entering Kvalifikacijas za Mill Street as Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, Estonia, Hungary, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia. While I'm sure the other 7 countries had their reasons for delaying their entry into the Eurovision Song Contest, we have our competing countries, and Kvalifikacijas za Mill Street took place on April 3rd, 1993. Now, if you don't speak Slovenian, you're probably wondering what Kvalifikacijas za Mill Street even means. Translated, it roughly means pre-selection for Mill Street. Mill Street being the name of the village in Ireland which hosted the contest in 1993. Why did the EBU host the pre-selection in Slovenia and not in a country like France or Switzerland? I don't know the answer to that question, but I theorize that it was mainly twofold. First, I imagine that the EBU wanted to give these new broadcasters the chance to show themselves off on home soil, and to allow one of the new broadcasters to host the pre-selection show supervised by the EBU, that would bring legitimacy to the new members of the EBU wishing to join Eurovision. Second, I believe they selected Slovenia because it was not only geographically central for six of the seven countries, Estonia being the outlier, it was also probably the most stable country to host it, although don't quote me on that one. I'm not well versed in Eastern European history to know for sure. Regardless, Kvalifikacija za Mill Street was to be held in Slovenia, hence the Slovenian name. It was originally planned to be hosted in Portorož, which is a seaside town on the Adriatic coast. Similar to the contest in 1991, the host city changed from a delightful seaside town to the capital city, and Ljubljana was given the honor of hosting the event. Kvalifikacija za Mill Street was held at Studio 1 of Televizija Slovenia, hosted by Tejda Lešk. This event would also be Frank Neff's final Eurovision event, as he retired from the position of executive supervisor, and his successor Christian Clausen was the executive supervisor for the contest in Mill Street. Kvalifikacija za Mill Street begins with a series of filmed locations across what I presume to be Slovenia. It's a mixture of architecture, nature scenes, and various people living their lives. The show would be broadcasted beyond the seven participating countries, so I imagine this introduction film would be a way to show off what Slovenia has to offer to a newly open world of tourism from the West, as well as to show off their strength in emerging from the oversight of Yugoslavian ideology. This goes on for about 3.5 minutes. The show then begins with the host introducing the program in Slovenian, English, and French. Here is the English portion of the introduction.
Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to the Studio One of TV Slovenia, where is to be held this year's pre-selection for the Eurovision Song Contest. It's my pleasure to be your host tonight and to wish you all watching us now in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Estonia, Croatia, Hungary, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia, as well as in Denmark, Portugal, Spain, and Cyprus, a pleasant evening of music.
The introduction wasn't a direct translation. Rather, it was a singular introduction in three different languages, so we don't get to hear the full introduction, including the musical director or some of the other pleasantries. However, at the end of the introduction, we dive right into the seven competing countries, with the order being determined at random. Each country also has a filmed postcard before they perform, showcasing what I assume is each competing country's landscapes and cities, and the host introduces each entry following the postcard. Let's go ahead and react to the seven entries of Kvalifikacija za Mill Street. The first country to compete is Bosnia and Herzegovina, who sent the group Fazla with the song Sva bol svijeta, translated as All the Pain in the World.
Da se nikada zlo ne ponovi.
Hajla, la, 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 sva bol svijeta, jednočas u Bosni, ostajem da bol prkosi.
It's important to remember that the Bosnian War was taking place at this time, and participating in the Eurovision Song Contest for countries like Bosnia and Herzegovina was a statement to the world to prove their legitimacy and worth in the international community. It was more than just a song contest, and this entry was a clear indication of that. The postcard film showed what I presume to be Sarajevo and other areas of the country, with some shots being of a prosperous town with shops in transit, while other shots were of literal bullet holes, buildings on fire, and abandoned war-torn areas. It's a stark contrast and a reminder of the horrors of war. Looking at the entry, it's hard to ignore the elements of the war ingrained in the very soul of the song. As a piece of music, I like the sound, and I think it's a great entry. Looking at the translated lyrics from the Diggaloo Thrush website, the lyrics are a clear expression of courage in the face of war, and this entry is an anthem of perseverance. Things like, "All the pain in the world tonight is in Bosnia. I'm staying to defy the fear. I'm not afraid to stand in front of the wall. I can sing, I can win." I ended up liking the Bosnian song. It sounds nice, and I think it's a really well put together entry. The second entry came from Croatia, who sent the group Put with the song Don't Ever Cry. I recognize that Croatia also had their own war of independence during this time, so I'm willing to forgive them for their blatant disregard for the language rule, but I'm still going to point it out. How did the EBU just let Croatia practically ignore the language rule? Countries had to sing in their national languages, and there are plenty of entries which include one or two words in English, maybe a phrase. But when half the song is in English? What's even more annoying is that they changed part of the lyrics from the Kvalifikacija za Mill Street version to the Eurovision version. Here is the Kvalifikacija za Mill Street version. And here is the Eurovision version. Moving past the rule-breaking, this song is another anthem of perseverance in the face of war, and it's a soothing entry to listen to. It almost reflects the feeling of comfort in the arms of someone who holds you in the midst of chaos and loss. To be honest, it almost feels like a lullaby, and its emotion is one of peace. I like the Croatian entry, and I'm even looking past their use of English lyrics. Again, with a country at war, there are some instances of situational forgiveness, and this is one of those times. Musically, this is well put together, and I think this is a lovely song. The third entry came from Estonia, who sent Janika Silama with the song, and apologies for my Estonian, this is not going to sound like Estonian at all, Mõrõtut meilt ja sudamentult, which translates as sorrowless mind and flames of heart. I find it fascinating that both the Slovenian commentator and the host mentions that Janika played Mary Magdalene at the 1992 Lina Hall production of Jesus Christ Superstar, which is a famous rock opera which tells the story of Jesus. Janika clearly has musical experience and definitely brings it to Estonia's entry. None of us knows what lies ahead for us. Senseless mind is on a changeable path. We don't suspect the worst, but it never makes it worse to see some laughter that brightens our way. These are just some of the lyrics of this cheery ballad. It's a good change from the emotional cries of war without leaving the realm of perseverance in the face of negativity. Musically, it's very musical, as in I would see this song on Broadway, and given her background in Jesus Christ Superstar, this doesn't surprise me. Broadway-style songs aren't too frequent in the Eurovision Song Contest, and while I enjoy the song, the musicality feels just too Broadway for my taste when placing it in the lineup for the Eurovision Song Contest. Some people may love this entry, and while Estonia wouldn't officially debut until 1994, I am proud of them trying in 1993, and vocally it was wonderful to listen to. The fourth entry came from Hungary, who sent Andrea Schulak with the song Arva Regel, which translates to Lonely Morning. This song is the first cliché song, and I'm surprised to find it in this lineup. With countries emerging from the oppression of Soviet and Yugoslavian regimes, you would think countries would send songs about perseverance or courage, but not Hungary. Instead, this entry is basically the expression of loneliness. Why does the sun shine on poor me who is now single and alone? Now, I get they could be talking about a lover that they lost in a war, but I can't really tell from the lyrics. This theme has been oversaturated in Eurovision. There are dozens of songs about breakups and loneliness, and while I get why Hungary would try to send a song like this, it's one of those you really picked that to wear kind of situation, and I thought the entry was bland and unimaginative. Honestly, I'm just disappointed in Hungary, not just in the theming of the message, but musically it's just there. It's not horrendous, but it's not turning any heads either. The fifth entry came from Romania, who sent Dida Dragan with the song Nu Pleca, which translates to Don't Go Away. Considering Dida's background in rock music, this is a dramatic turn away from her usual genre. This entry has an almost French taste in the verses, and it relies heavily on a vocal chorus to carry the song. I don't know if it's the audio quality, but the song is alright to me. It's better than the Hungarian entry, but it's another depressing song. The song asks, "Where are you?" as if searching for the love they once had. This is just as cliché as Hungary, but at least it's vocally interesting. The sixth entry came from Slovenia, who sent 1X Band with the song Tih Dechven Dan, which translates to A Quiet Rainy Day. This entry is a bop. It feels almost like a bossa nova beat, and it's the liveliest entry I've seen so far, and considering it's entry 6 of 7, I'm worried for Slovakia. This entry stands out from the depressing love ballads and songs about war, but the lyrics are extremely abstract. The song title is A Quiet Rainy Day, but it's anything but quiet or even rainy. The song asks, "What would the world be without dreams? What would time be without dreams? The blue sky is there. In the distance, the bell is heard. In the morning breeze, another victim follows me. How well I merge with this world that dazes me. How I'm absorbed in time that doesn't exist. I don't think I can even begin to break down the meaning of the lyrics, so as someone who doesn't speak Slovenian, I can conveniently ignore the meaning of the lyrics and just say that I like the rhythm and the musicality of the song. It's smooth, I can dance to it, and I like it. The seventh and final entry came from Slovakia, who sent the group Elan with the song Amnistia na Nevru, which translates as Amnesty to Infidelity. This song thankfully stands out to the other six entries as a solid rock entry in the mix, and I appreciate it. Slovakia doesn't have a great track record with Eurovision, and I think this entry is a solid effort. It has a great sound, and it takes the genre and simplifies it, which in this case works for the entry. You could amp this up and give it to any world-famous rock band from the 70s or 80s, and it would turn out great. The lyrics cry out for love, announcing an amnesty to infidelity, meaning that the song wants people to just forgive one another for the heartbreak they cause by cheating or leaving relationships for selfish reasons, and just come back together in the name of love. This borders on the cliché, but I think it stands out of the cliché because rather than complaining about loneliness, the song actively calls for the return of love, which is a message I can get behind. And those were the seven entries of Kvalifikacija za Mill Street. From the beginning of the program to the performance of the final entry, this took about 42 minutes. But needing to give the jury members time to vote, the program continues by inviting every act back onto the stage to perform one of their songs to showcase to the audience. Interesting idea. Instead of using interval acts, why not let artists and bands promote their own music? This takes an additional 32 minutes, and once all seven acts perform their own song, the voting sequence begins. Rather than relying on telephone connections, especially given some countries being in the middle of a war, each country sent one person to vote for their respective country. I won't critique this particular choice given the state of some countries, so I'll ignore the problems of using one-person juries and instead move on to the results. Each jury member gave their points to the top six entries, with 5 points being the lowest score and 12 being the top, mirroring the Eurovision system. Interestingly, each juror awarded their 12 points to a different country, so no country got more than one set of 12 points, which I think is absolutely fair. There also didn't appear to be any biased voting, which, given the relation between certain countries, shouldn't surprise anyone. Each jury member was featured on a camera and gave their points live in the same venue, so they didn't have to worry about signal failures along the way. It was a tight race on the top, with the top four entries getting 54, 52, 51, and 50 points. In the end, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, and Slovenia were chosen to participate in Eurovision, and Estonia, Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia were forced to wait until next year to compete. It's interesting that the three entries are all former Yugoslav republics, and if I didn't see the voting results, I would have suspected neighbor voting. But in this instance, the votes look clean to me. Yugoslavia is out, and former Yugoslav republics are in. It's like Yugoslavia never left, but instead just split into three countries. Of course, the remainder of the Yugoslav republics would join in their own time. But those are the official results. Let's close the episode with my thoughts on the entries, and I'll post a poll on Spotify so you can get in on the action and show me which three entries you would have chosen to go to Mill Street in 1993. Starting in last place, my seventh pick is Hungary. This was the least interesting entry with the most cliche elements, and while I understand why Hungary went in this direction, sending a song which would seem to be the most Eurovision in formulaic terms, this just goes nowhere for me. Sixth place for me is Romania. Like Hungary, it was a cliche song, but it was more vocally interesting compared to the Hungarian entry. It's another song which blends into the depressive theme of lovesick songs, but I don't hate it. I just don't think it's better than any other entry besides Hungary. Fifth place for me is Estonia. I would rank this lower just for my sheer disappointment in the expectations of the song, but it rises above the cliche. It's just not a genre that I think fits in what I'm personally looking for in a Eurovision entry, which means basically nothing to anyone except me. Given the musical background of the artist, I shouldn't be surprised by this entry, but it just doesn't pique my interest. Fourth place for me is Slovakia. I agree with the jurors placing this fourth. The song is a good quality entry. It takes the cliche into a new direction and the rock sound stands out from the other entries, but I don't think the quality is enough to stand out in the Eurovision Song Contest, especially with Western powerhouses. It's a good song on its own, but it would need a massive revamp, and given the short time frame between the pre-selection show and the contest, there wouldn't be enough time to improve the entry. Thus, it remains my fourth place, which means my top three, and by extension the three countries I would send to Eurovision, are the original top three, but do I agree with the jurors in their rankings? Third place for me is Croatia. I enjoy the song. The lullaby sound is soothing and I like the message of courage. I don't know if sympathy for war-torn countries plays a part in my decision, consciously or otherwise, but I do know that this would stand out in a field of songs, especially given the state of the region. This is my third place for two reasons. First is their use of English. I'm sorry, but I'm penalizing them for that. They should have to stick to pure Croatian. And second, I think the song is repetitive in its lyrics and form, and it lacks a direction to the overall structure. At the end of the day, I like the song, and I'm glad they made it to Mill Street. Second place for me is Bosnia and Herzegovina. The reason why this isn't my number one is because it's overly saturated in the lyrics and the meaning of the song, which I absolutely do not blame them for. Being in the middle of a struggle for independence, I do not fault them for the direction that they went in, and I commend the strength of the artist for taking part and for showcasing their music and struggle to an international stage. When taking out the context and looking at the entry on its own, its saturated structure places it in second place for me, as the remaining entry steps above that and brings an approachable tune in contrast to the emotionally overdriven composition of this particular entry. Again, it's not a bad thing. In my personal taste, it's second best. Of course, that leaves Slovenia as my overall winner. The song has a great rhythm and a wonderfully confusing mishmash of lyrics that I am absolutely delighted by. Paired with the ensemble they wore on stage and the overall sound of the entry, I am bopping along to the Slovenian entry, and I applaud their contribution to the Eurovision Song Contest. And that is the story of Kvalifikacija za Mill Street and my thoughts on the entries. I mostly agreed with the jurors, sharing the same top five and only switching Hungary and Romania in the rankings. But what do you think? Let me know which three entries you would have sent to Mill Street by voting in our Spotify poll or leaving a comment on our Instagram post. You can vote for more than one country on this week's poll, and you'll have until the end of April to let your voice be heard. Before we close today's episode, it's time for Song of the Week. This is a part of the show where I share a Eurovision entry that I love, or maybe I can't stand it, maybe I can't stop listening to it, or it's 100% forgettable. Let's find out which entry gets Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the 2008 San Marinese entry Complice, sung by Mio Dio. Composer Francesco Sancisi, lyricist Nicola Della Valle, and ended up placing last in the semifinal, placing 19th out of 19 entries, getting 5 points. It got 3 points from Greece and 2 points from Andorra. If you aren't aware, I am a huge San Marino fan. I have been to San Marino twice. I have stayed overnight in the capital on my first trip there, and I absolutely love the country. It's beautiful, historic, and the views are breathtaking. I would easily say I'm biased towards San Marino, so when I say that San Marino was robbed, usually you have to take that with a grain of salt. But in this case, no salt is required because this entry was truly and fully robbed. How this song came last in the semifinal, I will not understand. This song did worse than Dustin the Turkey, which don't don't get me wrong, I love dancing to that song, but seriously, Dustin the Turkey did better than Mio Dio? The song is an expression of passion, the love between two people becoming an accomplice on the journey of life, trying to comprehend the emotions of love and passion, like a tear on a white page between passion and music. They're just so much more. Musically, this is a great entry. The staging is a bit chaotic, but not horrible, and he sounds great. This is easily on the upper list of my Sam Marinese entries, comfortably in the top 5 or just below it. This should have qualified, and I'm sad that San Marino withdrew for 2 years after this. Seeking justice for a robbed entry that I think deserved to qualify, this week's Song of the Week goes to San Marino's Mio Dio. Qualificacias on Mill Street was an interesting experiment that feels like a precursor to the semi-final system we use today. It's just a shame that the EBU took 10 years to figure out that the first thing they tried had ended up being the best thing to narrow down the list of countries in the grand final, and I'm glad that the 4 countries that didn't make it ended up returning the following year. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with your thoughts or comments, you can reach out to us on our Instagram page at ESC101podcast. You can also send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you haven't already done so, please consider leaving us a review and sharing the podcast with your friends. Next week, we're going to be returning to the Eurovision Yearbook, so stay tuned to find out who we'll be covering next. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.